from the crypt.
Boys and ghouls, welcome to episode 111 of Dads in the Crypt. My name is Jason. I'll be your host tonight. And I'm joined by Mondo.
Hi, Jason.
Hi, Mondo. Jordy's a little under the weather, but we have a great guest for you tonight. His name is Rafael Flores Jr. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me, man. I'm excited, bro. I'm so excited to be on here.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your crypt fandom.
My name is Rafael Flores Jr. I'm the second, I guess. But anyways, I'm a comic book writer. I'm a horror writer. I have a new comic book coming out called The Return of Kamazotz on Kickstarter this Sunday. Go support it. I'll tell you later. But my crypt history, if you want to go there, like when I was a kid, I remember like when I was like 7 or 8, maybe even 9. Or 7, 8, or 9, you know, that range of like, you know, like you're starting to watch horror movies, your parents are starting to allow you, at least for me, you know, they were allowing me at a young age. But anyways, I remember watching it. My mom put it on for me. It was like a DVD set or a VHS set or something. And it was like the first like couple of episodes. And I just the one episode I do remember watching was that Santa Claus episode. The Christmas episode, that one was just like terrifying as hell. So that was the one that like stood out to me the most. And then like I didn't really, you know, watch it that much after that because we only had that one. It was probably like a Blockbuster video or something because we only had it for a short amount of time. And so I didn't really see that much about it since then. But I just remember watching that one episode later on in life. You know, I was always a big horror movie guy, you know, growing up. Me and my siblings, we loved to watch horror movies. Like, I my favorites was, like, Scream. Like, that was probably my favorite growing up. And, you know, I loved The Evil Dead. That was another one that was, like, a big one I loved. I grew up watching, like, I was probably, like, 6 when I watched, like, House of 1,000 Corpses, dude. I have a lot of older cousins who just like would be like, hey, we're watching this movie, come sit down with us, you know, like they did it for as a prank, you know what I mean, like they did it like to scare us. And so, but we loved it, you know what I mean. So I just grew up with that.
Nice.
Man, you might be one of the youngest people we've had on Dads in the Crypt, man.
Dude, we're old, man. I grew up with horror movies, man. It's just never like I've always grown up with them. I wanted to spotlight one something because I don't know if y'all know who James Rolfe is, like the angry video game nerd. Have you heard of that guy?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that guy. He came out with like a list like a couple years later, you know, a long time ago, that like his top 10 Tales from the Crypt episodes, and that like reignited my love of that franchise. After I saw that, I was like, oh wait, I missed out on all these episodes. And I was working at a library, you know, back then. And I was like, we need to order all these episodes. We need to order all these DVDs so we can, like, give them out to people. It's like, I want to watch them myself. But, like, I also, you know, I want other people to watch them, too. But, I love Tales from the Crypt, man. Like,
did you actually get them in the library?
2 or 3 seasons, you know. What's that?
Did you actually get them? Did you actually get them at the library?
Yes, we did. I ordered all 7 seasons. Dude, I got them all.
And what's so cool about that, though, because you ordered, I wonder how many people since then have discovered the series because they're at the library and saw that they could borrow it. That's super cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's awesome. And now let's talk about your comic real quick. Tell me about it and tell me how like it was kind of influenced by EC Comics.
So Daniel Grimm, the publisher, he's the one who came out to me and asked me to like, I had first come up with this like 2-page short comic. I don't know if you have checked out my page, but, I have like a 2-page short comic that I posted up there. And that was just like my first time trying to make a comic book, you know. I wanted to test myself to figure out how to do it, you know. And he saw that, and he like really pushed me to make it into a series. And so we made it into like a 3-part series, and he wanted it to have that EC Comics feel. Like he wanted it to have like kind of like an old school horror vibe. And so I was already, you know, I love horror movies already. So I watched American Werewolf in London. That was probably the biggest inspiration for me, like honestly.
Yeah, I was gonna ask about that, because definitely, yeah, especially like the last half. A couple
quotes in there, so I'm not gonna lie, like I just love that movie. I grew up with it. Like it was one of those movies I saw as a kid that like changed my life. You know, you see that transformation scene, and that like scars you for life. You know what I mean? Like, so that was one of the movies that I was very big inspiration. Like the Wolfman and werewolves in general was a big inspiration for. I wanted to tell this story of like just a. So I don't know. I don't want to spoil it, but like, but you know, it starts off. You know, just a story as a guy. It's about. It takes a lot of inspiration from Mayan mythology and specifically Kamazots and the Mayan hero twins. And there's a lot of folklore and mythology about Kamazots and the Mayan hero twins. And I kind of wanted to, like, I had learned a lot about it, you know, just studying it, because I really like that kind of stuff, you know, researching that kind of stuff. And I love horror movies, so I wanted to mix that, you know, my love of Mayan and mythology and horror, and I wanted to mix that and kind of, like, make this, like, I wanted to kind of make this, like, Mayan hero twins like set in the present day, but it was like a horror story. And I feel like Mayan and Aztec and even Native American, you know, stories are always have been that kind of horror monster stories, you know. And so I feel like it's always been there, you know what I mean? And so I just wanted to bring it out there, you know. I felt like this is something that is untapped, you know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Right. I read the first comic that you sent me, and it's a great twist on a lot of those tropes and themes. So
very much so.
You know what realm you're in, but you don't know where it's going to go exactly.
And there's a lot of twists.
That's the thing about a good comic, is that after I'm done reading, I'm like, wait, I want the next one already. I don't want to wait.
it's really good. And you say you have a Kickstarter coming out for it?
Yeah, the Kickstarter is going to be launching this Sunday. It's going to go throughout October. So you'll be able to, you know, support it at whatever tier you want to support it at. We're going to have a bunch of covers that we're going to reveal to people. And we're going to have, I'm going to say it now. We're going to have a mini poster that you can get with it.
Oh, cool.
And that's going to be a sick, I'm going to say it, psychedelic poster. Okay.
I like it.
You're going to love it, guys. Everybody's going to love it. The comic is just, it's gothic, psychedelic, horror, Mayan mythology, you know? So that's me personally. So that's what I wanted to bring out in a comic book. So.
So this episode should drop on Sunday. So if you're listening to this right now, if you look in the, we'll make sure that we link it in our, in the episode description, definitely. Mm-hmm. It's pretty badass. Also, like, the artwork is fantastic. The story's good. Like, it's, we're not just saying that because you're on the show, because if we don't like your comic, we'd be like, oh, we'll take your name down and call you later.
I read the comic before, like, agreeing to have you on, because I wouldn't just have anything. But yeah, if you like, it's very Mike Mignola inspired, like old school Hellboy comic is very cool.
Yeah. And I picked up the American Werewolf scene. I'm not going to spoil anything, but I thought that was super cool, because I immediately thought, this guy's a fan of American Werewolf.
Yeah, exactly.
And then
let me shout out Azrael again. Azrael Aguiar, he's the artist on the book. He does a killer job. He's super influenced by like Mike Mignola and, you know, Hellboy and stuff like that. He's totally about that. And like, we met and we did that short comic. That was our first time doing a comic book together. And then, you know, that's when Daniel met us and he told us, you know, to make a series. And so now this is our first series, both of our first series. So, you know, we're testing, we're like really pushing ourselves to like, you know, really like, you know, to make something really great. And I think it is great. You know, we're both proud of it. Daniel's proud of it. And so like, we're just really happy to show it out to the world now. We're finally able to show it out, you know? So, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, I've always said I'm big on that. Like, I won't promote anything on this show that I think sucks. So I'm pretty excited.
Really, that's a review really for me, man. That's a thank you, man.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, we don't have the highest standard.
I don't say we don't have the highest standard. We have a standard somewhere. Like, yeah, as long as you're not a neo-Nazi and you're okay.
That's the only guideline, Jason. Like, you can come on the
that's
show.
Like, listen, that's like the bare minimum.
The bare minimum, okay.
But all right, tonight we're talking about Tales from the Crypt episode Report from the Grave, season 7, episode 8, came out on June 14th, 1996. Since Jody's not here, Mondo gets the honor of doing this synopsis.
Alrighty, guys. So you open up with the Crypt Keeper in his little gardening farmer outfit doing his farmer duties, which is just some great puns. So and I said this a million times, but even if we review an episode and bash it, you owe it to yourself. Like, I wish someone would just cut together. I'm talking to you, Mr. Crypt's Tube and Corpserated. Just put together all the Crypt Keeper opening scenes. But a great opening scene by the Crypt Keeper as he's being a little farmer keeper. I don't know. And also for the Crypt Keeper being as old as he is, the fact that he doesn't have to wear readers. It's pretty impressive. Like, he has perfect 20/20 vision. So we open up with Elliot and Ariane. They're walking through a cemetery, and Elliot has a contraption that he wants to hook up to a dead brain to basically, he's trying to see if he can read their thoughts, right? Or reanimate them to some extent. So they enter a mausoleum, which holds the body of Valdemar Timrock. I pronounced that okay?
Timrock, yeah.
Timrock. And he's number 13 in the world class of Psycho's trading card set. He has 26 certified kills, 19 women and 7 men. Misogynist much? Like, come on, you can kill some more men in there. Just even that load out a little bit. Throw a couple children in, like, I don't know. Why not? maybe cat or two. Anyhow, he was a renowned mesmerist, and they talk about how he could hypnotize his victims with a single stare, which is a lost art. We should really bring that back, and we should learn those skills again. They should teach that in college. Yeah.
If you've seen his Satanic Hispanics, that's like one of the best parts of the whole movie.
Yeah, that is true.
Raphael, have you seen that yet?
I haven't yet. No, not yet.
Okay. So I won't spoil anything, but yeah, go see it. This is a great
hit. Very, very good. Under his control, he'd make them commit terrible acts, and then he'd murder them and bathe in their blood, Elizabeth Bathory style. Elliot believes that his brain and his powerful brain makes him a good candidate to hook up this machine, because obviously the guy could do, he's a terrible human being, but he could do some pretty impressive stuff. So he opens a tomb, and this body is very, very well preserved with formaldehyde. And they do make a mention on how, for some reason, he wanted the body preserved so later on he could re-inhabit his body. Which is also really weird, you would think, because like his body kind of sucked. Like, yeah. If you're gonna re-inhabit a body,
it was a very like, hey, we're gonna add this line in there, yeah. Very last minute, like just so we can like you know cover for this right now. You know, it was very
like if I die, and you figure out to put me back in a body, don't put me back in this shit. Like wait till Arnold Schwarzenegger dies and throw me in that fucking body or something like that. So he's being all snippy with Ariane because he's like, yeah, I think you stole some research papers for me. And she's like, nah, I don't even care. And then she does the sweetest thing in the whole movie. She draws a heart in his hand with it wasn't a very good heart. Let's be honest. Ariane is not an artist. It was a lopsided heart. And she goes, you'll always have my heart in your hands. So he hooks Timrock up to this device and he's adjusting the settings. And then he sees his research papers fall out of Ariane's bag. Ariana? Is that what he called Ariane?
Ariana?
Ariana? I just watched this like 2 hours ago. I should be able to.
I watched it like a second ago too.
Yeah. So while he's doing this, she takes the other headset and puts it on her own head and her own head. And he gets mad and he starts cranking this fucking thing up, which causes her to scream. And now she's being like electrocuted. And he does what every person would do in the situation. Yeah, he freezes. Like his reaction is to like make a weird face and be like, oh my God, what's happening?
Yeah.
So she falls to her death and he pulls the thing off. And then he wakes up in an asylum, strapped to a bed, straight jacketed. And then he has this image of of the serial killer Temrak basically killing his already deceased lover, I guess you can say. And then he finds out later that what she only took the papers from him to because she wanted to submit him to win an award.
Right. So he's like wrecked with guilt. You know?
Yeah. One of those classic red herrings, which fucking communication people are like, just have communication in a relationship. And this shit wouldn't happen. And also, if your partner upsets you, turning the power up on a machine that's on their head that you know is going to happen, that's not the way to handle conflict in relationships or in life in general.
Like, and also, like, why is she putting it on their head in the first place? It's
right.
Yeah. It's all weird. But you know what it reminded me of?
I'll go along with it.
Yeah. So I don't even know, but they did something similar in the movie The Beyond by Lucio Fulci, where the guy's actually testing for brain activity inside the morgue. So I thought that might have been, I'm not sure if it was a throwback to that, but I thought that was kind of cool. So he wakes up and he's actually in the hospital. And he looks in the mirror and he sees mental hospital. Yeah. And he sees these flies on the wall and they form a circuit. And he goes, oh my God, that's it. And he's drawing down the circuit. Don't look at the papers that you're drawing on because it looks nothing like the wall, the window. But he's drawing the circuit out. He's drawing just random lines on this paper. I'm like, that does not look like the.
It's so confusing. I don't know what this means. Like,
and I imagine it's the actor do whatever he wants to do because he doesn't think it's going to be on camera.
he's trying to get the flux capacitor together.
Yeah, exactly. He's trying to 88 miles an hour.
It was a circuit, I guess.
Yeah.
He decides with the circuit. He doesn't say it, but he thinks it must be Ariane talking to him from beyond the grave. That must be a message from her. Why she would choose flies, I don't know, but whatever. Weirder things have happened, I guess. So he uses a new circuit, upgrades his device, and you go to this room, and he's got all these dead bodies in there. Like, so many dead bodies. Like, yeah. There's something going on here.
And they're naked. So like,
yeah, these naked. Like, he's straight. Yeah, he didn't just, like, put them up in their tattered clothes. No, he stripped them naked. He's a weird guy. He's a weird guy. So he turns on the device, and you see Ariana appear in a ghostly form, and then she becomes full flesh and blood. And as the device is on, Timrak, the serial killer, returns through the gateway.
While they're boning, I guess? You just came back from the dead as a ghost person. Okay. Let's go hit the sack.
How dry would that be? Yeah,
bone dry.
Like, and I'm not even trying to be. Well, I'm trying to be a little bit gross, but even like the skin, right? Maybe you should put some lotion on before we. He comes back, and apparently he's so powerful he can reanimate himself, but he has a lot of trouble getting through a locked door. But eventually he kicks down the door, and they rush back to the lab. Timrak breaks down the door to kill them. He shuts a machine to get rid of Timrak. And of course, Ariane goes away in the same process. And she makes mention of saying, hey, he's used me. He's more powerful than you could ever realize. He used me knowing that you try to bring me back and he'd be able to come back because of this. So then we zoom out and then we see Elliot coming up to a crime scene. Cause he also, there's a book that he found to go to give to the main character, Elliot.
Death and the mind or something like that.
Yeah, I forgot what the name is of his friend. Yeah, but it's like Death and the Mind, and it was written by Timrak. Yeah. And then what you see at the very end is his best friend walks up to the police, and the police officer says, I have to show you something. I'm not a police officer, but I'm pretty sure, like, if I slipped my wrist in the bathroom and Jason showed up at my house, the cop wouldn't be here and say, hey, come check this out. Come check out your friend's dead body in the bathtub. But he's dead in the bathtub.
You want to prep that person a little bit?
Yes. Like, he's like, you won't believe what you're about to see. Didn't even prep like what was going to happen. Just took him right into this fucking dead body scene. Yeah. Elliot cut himself and he's dripping blood onto Tim Rack's book. And then on the window, you see the heart. The same heart. She drew it better on the window than she drew it on his hand. But the heart is appearing on the window, kind of saying that it looks like that he figured out how to also transcend the human realm and go to the spirit realm to find his lost love.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And I really liked it.
Yeah, Rafael, go ahead. You're our guest, so you can start us off. What do you think?
I was just saying, I really liked it. I watched it twice. The second time, I liked it even more. So, okay. The first time, you know, like, I was kind of confused about the science of it all, but you know, I was able to watch it all, and I was able to take out the you know, the kind of the romantic part of it, between the two scientists in the beginning that go into the graveyard, and yeah, it's just like, I don't know, that romance carries it through. The second time I watched it, it really carries it through to where, like, that I really appreciate the ending where that whenever he does kill himself and, like, you know, he ends his life and he's able to kind of pass on to the other life, or to the other realm or whatever. That part really, like, I love that part. I was like, oh, this is what the story's like, I don't know. Like, I get it. Like, it was kind of like a Reanimator vibe. It had, like, it was about a guy trying to talk to the dead. You know, that was kind of where it started, you know. And then, like, I didn't like how, you know, at first I didn't like how he killed the girl. Because it was a very petty way to do it. Like, he was really upset that, you know, she just, you know, she sent out that letter to, or whatever. It seemed like to him that she was trying to make money off of him, off his invention. And yeah, and at first, you know, he killed her, and but I really liked that he had that guilt over it. You know, it was very romantic in like a very gothic kind of way, that like he had that, he was dying, like he was very, like he went mad because of the guilt that he felt because of that. And so I really liked that, and that madness kind of drove him to go to the point of you know, digging up all those ladies. To me, I thought those ladies were the ladies that serial killer had killed. That's what I interpreted. I don't know if that's right. But and so I don't know. I just love that idea that he brought her back. It was kind of tragic that she couldn't stay, you know, that it wasn't permanent. And that was also kind of very gothic and very beautiful in a way that she had to leave. You know, I get the whole serial killer, you know, thing, like at the end, like it's a Tales from the Crypt episode. So it does have to be that, like I said, like, you know, part in it, but I wish they would have kept it like very gothic horror and like very like sad and depressing. You know, it was great. I loved it. I would have given it 4 out of 5 stars. I would have given it 4 out of 5.
Man, you're ahead of the game here already.
All right, Amanda.
You know, so it was the ending that kind of wrapped this one up for me in a nice little package, and mainly because I was thinking it's not really a happy ending, because he kills himself after reading Tim Rack's book. So is this just, would Tim Rack have written this book to give other people his same powers, or to lure them into the afterlife where he can torment them eternally? And that was kind of my take from it, is like, I think he was duped. I think, again, he was tricked at the very end to give himself up and to basically go into the afterworld where Tim Rack is going to now torment both of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but aside from the opening where I'm with you. I didn't like the way he killed, unintentionally, obviously. He wasn't trying to kill her, but he was trying to cause her distress and or harm, which is still not okay. And but no point though. Does she ever? I feel like when she came back from the dead, she'd have some questions.
Yeah. What was up with that?
Like, yeah.
What's the deal? Like,
I can't help but notice you cranking that handle while while my brain is frying. I think some of the effects were definitely done on the cheap, like the dead body effects. Again, I thought almost going for like a Lucio Fulci kind of look, but not done as well. Just with the clay kind of facial, it looked almost overdone. It almost looked like someone that's put too much makeup on and then walked out of the barn.
It's very caked on.
Yeah, it's exactly. And my only other gripe on this, and it makes sense when you see what other movies this director did, was a lot of the jerkiness in Tim Rack's movements, because she didn't move that way. So why does he move that way in the afterlife? And that was actually very visually distracting to me, at least, where I thought it almost kind of took me out of it. It reminded me of going back to like 1998 and watching shitty MTV music videos, mm-hmm. which every music video did that. That's one thing I really didn't care for. But overall, I would say, like, especially for season 7, this is one of the few episodes this season that's really kind of brought the horror to it. Where it's been more of a horrific episode, where a lot of these episodes have been whodunits or been mysteries almost.
Crime episodes.
Yeah, where this one really did bring a nice, brought it back to kind of its horror roots, which I really did enjoy.
Yeah. I'm really torn on this, because I don't think the scripting on this was very good. There's just, a lot of plot holes and things that, like, they tried to explain, but just not very well, that like I think they needed more time to kind of rewrite.
Did it feel like, to you like almost it was a longer script that they had to cut down to fit with Tales from the Crypt?
Yeah, maybe. And I didn't think the acting was particularly great, or they just weren't very magnetic. I thought especially the main guy, I was like, he's kind of milquetoast.
I like the main actor. He was the best part for me.
So his name is James Frain. He's in actually quite a few things. He was in 24, True Blood, Tron Legacy, I think season 2 of True Detective, and most recently Star Trek Discovery. But I didn't love the actors. You know, I didn't love the actors. I didn't love the script very much. But I will say I did like the directing. I thought it was just really well. Mm-hmm. The shooting, the shots was really fun, and just kind of everything kind of came together visually.
Oh yeah, I will say if any episode ever needed an epilepsy warning, it'd be this one.
Yeah, and also I'll give a shout out to like. I thought on the production side, except for the makeup effects weren't great, but I think that's just kind of what they were going for.
The budget for season, what we talked about, was non-existent. So like, I get it. This is the seventh season, right?
It was like the last season, right?
Last season, and they were given no budget really to work with. So
the last bit of energy and like creativity that these guys have. But like, I can see it on the screen. Like with the whole like lines to cover just budget, you know, constraints. You know what I mean? Like you can see it on the screen. But I love that stuff because I grew up watching this kind of like cheap movies and stuff. But yeah.
I did like the props and like the those like machines that they kind of built that were kind of around. Those are actually pretty cool. I'll give a shout out to like the set dressing and the crew and the props and all that. They did a good job. I think it's a well made on a technical level, on that technical level.
Yeah,
but I just don't think the script was good enough. It definitely needed another couple passes, and I didn't really care for any of the actors. It's about average, I think.
It's all about this length,
But yeah, I mean, again, on the season 7, at least it wasn't like formulaic. I'll give it that, as some of the other ones we've seen. But like, come on, how much were you expecting for him to literally have her heart in his hand, like her beating bloody heart? I was kind of waiting for that. I was like, I was promised a bloody heart.
I was kind of thinking the same thing, like a Kano style fatality was going to happen or something like that. But be fair though, it wouldn't have worked if he'd have ripped her heart out instead of killing her with the machine. That'd have been a way different vibe of the episode.
Or at least like a dream sequence or something where she's like, I told you'd have my heart in your hand.
That'd have been really great if when you first saw him in the asylum. Mm-hmm. And when he saw her being tormented by Tim Rock, if like he'd have busted out of a straitjacket and Tim Rock would have handed him his heart or something like that, that'd have been really cool.
Yeah.
We need to build that time machine, Jason. We can go back and pick some of the shit.
And like, I think, we didn't
follow the comic very well either, so.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and like a lot of them don't. A lot of them just follow the comic in name only or like in tone only. So it's a crapshoot.
So this was directed by William Malone. He did last season the episode Skin Deep, or I think it's only Skin Deep, the Sherry Rose episode, which is a fantastic episode. Mm-hmm. And he also did House on the Haunted Hill and Fear.com. So again, we got that late 90s, early 2000s kind of horror aesthetic.
Fear.com was basically a music video stretched out to an hour and a half. It's not very good at all. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, they have some good ideas in that though. There's some really cool ideas in that, especially when it came out in like 99 or 2000, the dawn of the internet. Right. But I will go to bat for that House on the Haunted Hill remake. Right. I think that's
it's fun.
I think that movie's actually kind of terrifying.
Mm-hmm. The actress who played Ariana, I don't know how I'm going to say this name right. Siobhan Flynn. She was also in Fear.com and some other British TV. I thought it was really funny. I was very curious about who played Tim Rock because you really just see him in makeup and just kind of flailing around. He never says anything, never really does much other than that.
I really hope people are watching the live video just to see whatever you just do with your arms there. I'm not sure what you're doing, but it was great.
He's played by Roger Ashton Griffiths. He was in Brazil, Young Sherlock Holmes. He did the voice of Mr. Toad's Wild Rides, and most recently he was in Game of Thrones as Mace Tyrell.
Once you see his face
from Game of Thrones, like, oh, that guy.
You know, come and think about it, I wonder if they did that effect, that cool like music video effect with his face to hide the makeup. maybe, or lack thereof, which if so, that's pretty clever actually.
Yeah.
I wonder who he was in Brazil.
I don't think it was a major. That's that been a long time since I've seen that movie.
I don't know if anybody's ever seen that movie.
Great. But
you know what? It's one of those movies that I've had. I think I've actually owned the Criterion DVD for it and never actually watched it. Because it's like 3.5 hours long, I think, right?
Well, there's different cuts. So some are really long, some might
be. Yeah, dude, but the way I am though, I want to watch the longest cut just because not like I'm missing out.
Yeah. Do it.
Yeah, it's been on my list forever. I really need to.
Yeah, this is kind of a mixed bag of an episode. It's not terrible. It's watchable. Yeah. That's my statement on it. It's watchable.
This is a season 7 episode, right?
Yeah. It needs some more baking, I think, in the oven.
Yeah. And also you could tell with the low budget, too, being such a small set. Like, it was basically 3 rooms they used. Mm-hmm. And also three actors aside from me. Like, the police chief and, like, the couple, extras. That's it. So, you can definitely tell
those kind of movies. I love those kind of, like, bottle episodes or those bottle movies where you have, like, just 3 actors or the small locations or just a few locations. Yeah. So, I think they could have done something. But, yeah, I understand. There's probably like time constraints and it's like,
Jason hates everything, it's fine.
What?
Yeah. So Jason hates everything, it's fine.
Yeah, I don't, I'm a hater.
I think on season 10, you've been afraid of her. Oh, you have?
Yeah. I've done a couple for community college and stuff like that. Just for
Did you put them online or anything like that?
I'll show y'all one, but I put it hidden because I don't like showing people.
I feel you, dude. I feel you. As a guy that makes music, I'm like, can I hear your music? I'm like, no, you can't.
All right, let's go to the comic. Rafael, you can help me on this because I just read it a few minutes ago and I just kind of speed read it. But basically, and I even have Monty. Can you look up what comic this is from and like the year and all that?
It was Vault of Horror. It was Boss of Horror number 15, I believe, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so it was a weird one. Like, it wasn't very close to the show at all, right? It was very loosely based, I would say. There was no like mind controlling the dead. It was none of that on there. It was just like strictly like there was like this weird death club, and then like there was this one member,
the Vault Keepers. It's the Vault Keepers Club, which I thought was a fun meta.
Yeah.
And basically, one of the members has passed away, and they're replacing him with a new initiate. But to join the club, he has to exhume the body and look at his watch to tell what time he died and report back so they know he did it. But when he got there, there's a badly decomposed body, so he thinks they're playing a trick on him. And I guess there's an argument about how he died. And they're blaming one of the other guys as possibly poisoning him because he went out with his girlfriend or something like that, trying to steal his girl.
And then he just gives up. And then he just gives up, like, oh, I did it.
He just like confesses. But then suddenly there's an explosion further away in the graveyard, and they found where the body was actually buried. And the reason why, this is funny, the reason why it exploded is because they didn't drill any holes in the coffin. So as the body decomposed, the gases burst. Yeah. Which I don't know if that's a thing. That seems, I don't know if that tracks. Yeah. And so basically, the other guy confesses and they just kind of take him in. And
The confession was kind of weird. That confession was so weird. Yeah. It was just like, he was like, yeah, it was me the whole time. Like, even though I just a second ago, I said it wasn't me. Oh, yeah, it was me. Like, I was like, dude, you're so weak, bro.
I remember one time one of my kids did something. I forgot what it was. They did something and they were like, did you do it? And like, it wasn't me, but it was. Like, okay. It was great. All right, let's move to our episode rating. Again, we do 0 to 5, 5 being the best, 0 being the worst, new half points. Rafael, you already spoiled it and said you're doing a 4, right?
I can elaborate on it if you want.
Yeah, go for it.
Go for it.
So yeah, I gave it a 4 just because I'm a big romantic at heart. And like the whole, it started off with the girl and the man like she's really into him. He's kind of not that into her, it seems, you know? And so, like, it was just very cute, and I loved it. And then he didn't mean to kill her. Like, it was an accident, you know what I mean? Like, so, like, that part was very, like, tragic and sad. And then he went to the mental hospital for it, and I was like, damn, that's fucked. That's hard, man. I get it. And then he came out, and, like, he tried to bring her back, and he brought her back. But, again, tragedy struck again. And it's like, no, you can't be together because there's a serial killer, and he's back now, too. And he's going to come and kill her. I guess her ghost version of her or whatever. But, like, I don't know. I didn't really like that part, but I get it. You know, you gotta have tragedy, I guess. And then, I feel that it ended a very positive way. I love the ending because, to me, like, even though she had to go back to the afterworld or to the end, you know, like, I call it the underworld or whatever. And, he decided, you know what, I'm going to join her and I'm going to go with her. And I feel like that heart at the end was her, like, saying, like, after he, you know, did what he did, it was her saying, like, hey, I'm here with you. Like, hey, like, you know what I mean? Like, hey, we're together again, you know, kind of thing. And that was beautiful to me. And I love that. So
that's like, yeah, but see, that heart was way better drawn at the end. So there's no way she drew that heart. Like, it was jealous. I'm just kidding.
I just imagine, like, the I'm sure I'm trying to imagine, like, the intern or whoever they got to get up on the ladder and draw the heart from the outside.
Production assistant. Okay, well, why they didn't do it from the outside?
Can I say one more thing? Like, I love the opening of the Crypt Keeper, how he was, like, a gardener. I thought, like, at the beginning, I was like, oh, this is a gardening episode or something. Or this is going to have something to do with a farmer or something. You know what I mean? And, like, because he was, like, I don't know, the Crypt Keeper was all like, I'm a farmer or something at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, they used to try to, like, tie in the Crypt Keeper bits to something happened in the episode, but I think they've been through so many scenarios that they're just now just doing random ones. It's almost like a random Crypt Keeper scenario generator.
Yeah.
I didn't talk about in the synopsis, the very end, the wraparound of the Crypt Keeper, when he goes, how about some squash, and smashes the guy's head into the ground. I laughed so hard.
Yeah, it's just like, funny. it didn't really connect well, but I did like it because at first I thought, it was going to be some kind of farm episode. And I'm a big, like I love farm workers and stuff. Like, I come from a long line of farm workers and stuff. And like people who, like, grow their own crops in their backyards and stuff. So I love that kind of stuff. And I thought that's what this episode was going to be about. But I was like, oh, it's okay. Like, oh, it's all right. I didn't care. But also, the episode also had a lot of similarities to, I feel like it had a lot of similarities to my comic book, to where, like, it, like, started with the graveyard scene. And then, like, trust me, guys, whenever y'all read the next issue and the rest of the comic, you will see more similarities from this episode to the comic book. Trust me, like, there was a lot of similarities in there, and I was like, ooh, this is kind of, like, perfect for me to come and, like, talk about.
Damn.
I see that.
Yeah, the whole kind of suicide angle is very relevant.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious where that goes in your comic. All right, Mondo, what do you rate this episode?
I'm going to give it a 3. And I'll be honest, us talking about it made me go up a little bit more because I liked it more than I thought I did. That kind of epilepsy stuff and with the camera shakes and with the weird, like, 90s music video cutting usually takes me, like, right out of something. So but the fact I was able to get past that and still actually enjoy the episode, and I love the way it wrapped around. It ended it with kind of and like I said, it can be interpreted different ways. I love your interpretation of it, Raphael, but mine being a little bit different. Like, I like the fact that we can all interpret that a little bit differently, which is kind of a sign of some decent storytelling, even if the script wasn't the tightest. Yeah. I do think in 111 episodes, this is the first time someone's ever said they loved an episode due to the romantic inclination of it. But so I'll take that. I do love that. Like I said, I I'm gonna go 3.5. Actually, I'm gonna go a little bit higher. Because I do think it was I do think there's a lot of good pieces to it, and I'm not gonna lie, this is one of those times where sir, you sold it to me with your enthusiasm for it and made me like it even more after the fact.
I'll also say the acting, I thought it was pretty good, but I'm also, like, kind of a guy that's like, if it's British actors, I can't tell if it's good or bad. So to me it was immediately good because they were British, and so I was like, class. You know what I mean? Like,
well, they actually did a study years ago where they found if they had basically people guess the IQs of different people based on their accents. And yeah, English people rated way higher. And then I said before, I have an uncle who's a neurosurgeon, but he has a crazy Kentucky drawl.
Yeah.
And people think he's an idiot. It's like, dude, that guy's one of the smartest human beings I've ever known in my life. So I think if you have an English accent, you immediately go up a couple notches in your intelligence, even if you're dumb as dog shit. But again, England has this thing, much like we talked about earlier before the show started, how like in Mexico, the more your dialect is closer to the old country, to the or to native, you're looked down upon. Whereas English and like proper English, the King's English is kind of the same way, where the it's almost like Mexican Spanish versus Spain Spanish, where Mexican Spanish is way more cruder, I guess. The Spain Spanish is the more proper Spanish, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that mixed up. And I think that's the same way with England, where they kind of, if they have that proper British accent, they're looked upon as like regal and royalty. But if they have that Cockney accent, then they're considered to be of lower class. And it's stupid.
I'm going with a 2.5 on this episode. It just didn't really do it for me. Maybe if I watched it again, or maybe after your interpretations, but if I'm not picking up on that on the first watch, then that's not really.
And 2.5 isn't bad. Like that's a middle of the road episode. Like
exactly,
especially in the season where you're seeing some real stinkers. Like that's not bad.
Yeah. All right. Well,
you didn't hate it.
I didn't hate it.
Yes.
But I wasn't bored. I'll give it that.
Yeah.
But everyone's entitled to their opinion. And now let's go to our Uncle Al for his opinion.
Hi, it's Alan. After Bill Malone made only Skin Deep in season 6, we gave him pretty much free rein to do what he wanted. I think Bill wanted to make Frankenstein, and to me, that's what this episode is, Crypt's Frankenstein Show. I had virtually no input on the script. I think I gave Bill some script notes early on, but I might not have. The truth was, at that point in our English adventure, I had bigger fish and chips to fry and no need to babysit a writer and director I trusted. It was also at this point in our English adventure where most of the fun of shooting Crypt in England had been spent. We were down to the messy cleanup. Gil was in Los Angeles for a spell recutting Bordello of Blood. Our first English production manager, Malcolm Christopher, had assured us we'd transition seamlessly to shooting in England. We never did. There were cultural differences we never had the time to overcome because we were too late in realizing they were there. Malcolm's politeness and assurances hid the fact that we had cultural differences. They also hid the fact that Malcolm had no idea where we were with the money, and Gil and I were manic about always knowing where we were with the money. In the end, I had to fire Malcolm and his accountant, the first two people I ever fired in my entire life. Frankly, I sucked at it. But at least while all that shit was going on, I didn't have to worry about what was happening on the set because Bill was directing. As with everything Bill Malone, the episode is great looking and creepy out the wazoo. Bill brought his anamorphic lenses with him to England. That's how he captured that unsettling look for his monster. His Frankenstein monster. See you next time.
All right, and we're back. Mondo, give us our song of the day.
All right, so sticking with last week, I talked about Aztec, a black metal band called Mictlantecuhtli out of Los Angeles. Today, I'm going to go with actually a band I actually did mention last week, part of the Black Twilight Circle, and a Mexican metal band that's more Mayan-influenced called Volhan. And they released the last record they released was an EP, I think, in 2019, so it's been a few years, called El Tigre del Sur. Which is a song, and it's an homage to Emiliano Zapata, who was one of the most famous Mexican revolutionaries who helped spearhead the Mexican Revolution in 1910. And that is a song. It's a 15-minute song. It's one song on the EP. Jeez. And it's actually quite fantastic. And anytime I can give love to bands in the metal genre that aren't white males, I'd love to do it because there's such a, and I talked about this last week, so I apologize if anyone doesn't want to hear me rant about this again, but it's the fact that the Mexican community is just so into metal and supports metal, and there's so many metalheads, so many bands, so many Mexican bands. It's fucking awesome. It's awesome to see. And the more and more bands like these that get notoriety, the better. And it's also cool to see these bands and Mexicans, a band based out of California, Black Twilight Circle is all based out of California, and all these bands actually kind of like discovering their native and indigenous roots.
Yeah.
Because anybody out there that's Mexican, maybe listening to this, dude, get your 23andMe done or whatever, because unless you've done some shit you shouldn't have done, then don't do that, because then you're in a database. But it's kind of crazy because you don't realize how many of us are indigenous. We're just not thought of as the same because we're Mexican. I'm like 40% Mexican indigenous, even though I obviously don't look it. But it's crazy how many of us have those native roots, even though it's not widely spread across. And what's even crazy too is like even in communities I work with a lot of Native American casinos and stuff, and some of these tribes do have the Mexican part of the tribe and the American part of the tribe. And guess how much the Mexican part of the tribe gets from casino royalties?
None. Zero.
So it's still it's cool seeing anytime any artists, granted, my love is deeply rooted in metal, but anytime you see artists going back to their roots and learning about their roots, and even when I talked about McClendecootly last week, I haven't talked to the guy in years and years and years, but back when like 2010-11 when they'd come to Vegas all the time, I was talking with their bass player, who actually was a student, a teacher's aide, who was actually teaching in helping the ESL classes, helping kids learn English, but also teaching them about Mayan and Aztec culture, which I thought was really cool about teaching people just about the roots. So song of the day, roundabout way to get there, is Volhan, El Tigre del Sur, off the same named EP. So check it out, guys.
Mondo, that sounds interesting. Send that one to me.
I mean, so if you're listening to this too, by the time you listen to this, there's a Dads from the Crypt playlist on both Apple Music and Spotify. Subscribe to that playlist. I will try to update it every week. I'm almost 100% updated. I should be by the time that you guys listen to this and you can hear every song I've ever recommended, unless there has been a handful that have not been on Spotify or Apple Music, but for the most part, they all are.
Cool. All right, let's go down to our Patreon pit. We have a new Patreon this week by the name of Joel. Welcome, Joel. Thank you for subscribing. Go, Joel.
One subscriber closer to retirement.
Mm-hmm. Someday.
One million more to go, guys. Let's do this.
I would you rather for the week? Would you rather be locked for a week in a room that's overly bright or that's totally dark? Well, you guys think about that. Our Patreons, all of them, voted totally dark.
So this is another one of those times, Jason, like, are you okay? Do you do I need to come out there? Do you need another good hug? Like, I can give you another hug, because
I've had a week. I'll say that much. But I tried to do something kind of interesting, like, you know, not like, would you rather have, you know, pizza or tacos, you know. I think something a little interesting question about
pizza, but this is an interesting one, because I thought about this a lot, actually. So if it's bright all the time, right, the question is, can you sleep with the lights on? That is the main question, and I can't do that. I would just be wanting to, I would not make it, so I'd have to go darkness. But then again, now I'm alone with my own thoughts, which is fucking terrifying too. So there is no great answer to this.
That's the point. But also, like, I think the brightness initially would be, like, overpowering. But I think, like, if you're in darkness for a week, like, your brain's really going to fuck with you. You start seeing shit and, like...
Wait, hold on a second. I have questions now to your thing. Am I wearing clothes? Or am I naked in this room?
That's up to you.
You can do whatever you want. Okay. You can take off your
You cannot artificially block your eyes in this scenario.
Okay, never mind then.
You're by yourself.
I saw you.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute, I can just blindfold myself and just sleep. I'd be a fucking...
No, you can't have no clothing. You can't have no clothing to block your eyes.
As Jason says, I can't block my eyes, which is just...
I mean, you can put your hands over your hands, but that's, again, you can't do that for a long period of time. But yeah, I feel like the darkness would just like drive me just as mad, if not worse, afterwards.
I don't care what anyone says. Like, I don't care how old you are. At some point in your adult life, you've been afraid of the dark.
Oh,
like,
hell yeah.
You have walked in that dark hallway, and especially as horror fans, our brains have gone, oh, wouldn't it be crazy if Leatherface is in this hallway? And then your brain goes, oh, fuck, what if he is? And now you're just afraid for no reason whatsoever.
Like, you ever gone camp? Like, one time I went camping, and I got up to use the bathroom in the middle of the night, and it was pitch black. And for some reason, I bring a flashlight with me, and I went to go, you know, pee by a tree, and I couldn't figure out which way the tent was, and I had like a total panic attack trying to figure out which way to go.
Dude, I read this. I listened to back before Joe Rogan was completely insane. He had a guy on there who does underwater cave diving.
Oh no.
And he was talking about how he went underwater and the dust kicked up and he couldn't see which way he's going. And you're so disoriented. You don't know what's up or down. Like, I'm listening to this podcast on the way home from work. I had to turn it off. Cause I was white knuckle on the wheel. I know he survived cause he's on the podcast, but holy shit. And that's tough, dude. Like, that disorienting feeling when you're in complete darkness is, when I was 18 or 19 working at Target. If you ever go by Target, they have these little spill stations everywhere. There's a flashlight in every single one in case the power goes out. And I was always thinking, this is back in 2001, 2002. How bad could it be if the power went out? Then the power went out once and you couldn't see 2 inches in front of you. Yeah. I was like, holy shit, this is true darkness.
Yeah. Yeah. When it's pitch black, it messes with you.
Sorry. Rafael, my answer is darkness. I'm a darkness guy.
I pick darkness too, dude. Because I don't know. I don't know about you guys, but have you ever done that trick where you just close your eyes and just walk around the house?
No,
I do that all the time because I don't know. I'm also half blind in one of my eyes, so I can't really see that good. I really have I think it's called mono vision or whatever. But so I've always had that feeling of in case I lost the other eye, I wanted to know what it felt like. So I would always close my eyes and pretend I was blind all the time as a kid or something. I tried to pretend I was blind basically so I could practice in case I ever lost it. You know what I mean? I love that. I think I would be able to survive being blind and I would be able to survive having no vision basically. So. I think I'd be okay.
You know what? When people say, granted, I'm not taking for granted my sight, my hearing, because I feel for people who have to deal with that. But we have a guy that drops in our gym every now and again that does jiu-jitsu, and he's a black belt and he's blind and he needs help. People will help and guide him to the training partner, but that guy's a badass. The way he moves and the way he can kind of feel how your body's moving is fucking unreal to me. So shout out. Props to anyone that feels that and the way people can adapt to that kind of stuff just blows my mind in a very positive way.
Yeah, I would imagine when you're grappling on the ground, you don't really have a sense as much of vision as you are momentum and the leverage.
But you do though, because if I'm trying to get put my hands where they want to go, I have to be able to see what you're doing, where you're reaching for, so I can stop your hand from grabbing the back of my head or stop your hand from grabbing my wrist, which I don't want you to do. So, but there's times I was grappling with him. I go to grab his collar and he fucking stopped my hand. I was like, how did you know that was coming? And
every little pressure of weight and every wherever it's at, they feel it. And so they know where it's at.
Yeah.
And it's just a fun practice to just walk around your house blind and try to see how much, where your furniture is at. You know what I mean?
I just envision myself falling down the stairs.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I don't have a stairs. So I don't have to deal with that.
Or tripping over my dogs and hurting them. I can't do that.
I have one stair, and I'm I'd be worried that I would just fall down that.
Like one single step?
Yeah.
Okay. That's your concern in life?
Exactly. You got to hold on to the rails. You got to hold on to the rails.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well.
Wait, Jason, did you answer?
Yeah. I said darkness. No. Darkness, right? Yeah, I'll go darkness. But after a week, man, it'll be... It'll be a scene. I'll put it that way.
Well, I hope you're. Well, so Jason, while we're still here, tell us about your haircut today.
Oh, so it was the Jewish New Year last week, and I only go to get a professional haircut only a couple times a year. I usually just break out my clippers and buzz my head.
Real fast, I'm gonna ask a dumb question. Is that Rosh?
Rosh Hashanah, yeah.
Rosh Hashanah, okay.
Rosh Hashanah, which literally means head of the year. So it's the start of the new year. So
it'd be funny if you just meant head.
Yeah. So I decided to go pay for a haircut. So I went to Bishop's, where I usually go. And then I really mostly care about getting my beard looking decent. And then I'll just pay for the cheaper buzz cut on the top. Oh,
and it's looking good.
So I went
good,
and just wait. So I got my stylist I was talking to them, and I noticed that they were relatively new. Like, they didn't set up their workstation or anything. And if you ever go to, like, the Bishop, it's the kind of place where people put, like, flair and pictures and posters and stickers everywhere. He said, oh, yeah, I know. I just started here. It turns out that they were on strike from – they're part of the strike against the film and TV producers, and they decided to go get a job at Bishop's.
Well, real quick, though, shout out to the Writers Guild. The Writers Guild got the deal they wanted, so shout out to the Writers Guild. Man. A lot of people are going to get their just desserts, like what they deserve.
Yeah. So anyway, so this turns out this guy was a stylist for the film and TV show industry studios. So I was like, who else's hair have you done? He's like, oh, you know, Kathy Ireland, Sofia Vergara, Cardi B.
Real quick, Kathy Ireland, who follows me on Twitter.
Who follows you on Twitter. Okay, that's what you want to talk. That's why I'm going to tell the story, because you want to mention Kathy Ireland.
About that part. I saw this interesting story, but she follows me. I don't follow her back. Just saying. Sorry. She's not removed. Sorry, Kathy. No, her content's not interesting enough. Like, she needs to post better content. And once she does that, we can talk.
My favorite is that it's probably like a fake account that you've been like.
No, it's your legit account. Over. I don't understand like why. I figured she had like 800,000 people she followed. No, I'm one of 32,000 people, which is when you really think about it, not a whole lot of people. It's like 1%.
Yeah. Maybe so I'm like just sitting there like, wow, this person's hands are on my head. I've been on all these, you know, famous, beautiful heads. And he's like, he gave me a very, very good haircut. I was like really impressed.
Yeah, you're looking good, Jason. You got the beard all nice and trimmed.
He spent a lot of time. And that's funny because I'm on my lunch break because I figured it shouldn't take that long to do a beard cut and a buzz on the top. But like, no, this person took the time. I was like,
Did you bust out the straight razor?
No, he did it all by scissors, little clippers on the sides. But
so you're fancy Hollywood elite, right, Jason?
Oh yeah, totally.
How much do you pay for a haircut in Hollywood, where you're from? in California, in Orange County.
I mean, I think Floyd's is a chain. They're very typical, as far as like that kind of place. I think it was with the buzz cut and the beard trim. I think it was like $50.
I pay more than that. Damn it. See, when I had long hair, I just never cut my hair. So I didn't have to fucking deal with anything.
Yeah, I cut my own hair, so I don't have to pay.
It's one of the best. Yeah, see, at one point I got an undercut, and my wife would just do it for me every now and again. She just cut it. Like, that's cool. And then I chopped all my hair off. I was going to this place in Vegas. I'm just going to call them out. Called Look Style Society. And the person that did it was always late. So, and she was charging me like $70. I'm like, I don't even think it looks that great.
No.
And then a friend of mine goes, you should go check out my barbershop. Shout out to Good Times Barbershop. Shout out to Moy, one of the co-owners who's been cutting my hair now for the past 6-7 years. Just got his blue belt in BJJ, so good for him. But I went to him, got a recommendation, and I walk into this shop, and it's a Mexican shop, and they're playing Boys in the Hood. Oh, sorry, they're playing Blood in, Blood Out when I walked in there. Yes. And I'm like, fuck yeah, this is my spot. I've been going there ever since. But I don't know how much my haircut costs. I've just always just given him $60. And he's always been happy, so I just deal with that. So when I saw long hair, right, I had this undercut going because that's why I had too much. It's in living in Vegas. It's always 100 fucking degrees out here.
Back then.
No. I can send you a picture when I had really long hair. But I used to do the undercut. And then I went to a sports clip. I was working at Target at the time. So I was like 20, 21, and whatever. And I went to the sports clips, which is right around the corner from my, just to get the trim done because my wife was busy. And she started doing it, and she got like to here, and she goes, I'm scared I'm going to mess up. Wow. And I was like,
oh my God.
You know what? We're done. So I went back to work with like half my head shaved right there.
Yeah. I've had some bad experiences with sports clips. And
So Jason, I need you to hear me out here, right?
My mother used to be like a cut hair, you know? I always grew up with her. And then my dad started doing it after that. And then after that, it was just like, I don't trust anybody. I just do it myself.
Growing up Mexican, and Jason, you'll understand this. Growing up Mexican, at some point, a relative is going to cut your hair who's a hairdresser, and they're going to fuck it up. Yeah. Like, I remember I was in like fifth grade, and my aunt is a hairdresser. She's going to cut my hair so we can save $20. And she fucked my shit up. I just shaved my head after that. It was so bad.
Yeah, I've got like five.
But hear me out. Yeah, dude. Like, come, Jason, hear me out though. Skullet. Can you do a skullet?
What's a skullet?
Bald on the top, long hair of the Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan.
I mean, if I stopped cutting my hair, that's pretty much what would happen.
That'd be I'm just asking you. How much Patreon donations would it take for you to grow the fucking skullet?
Well, actually, my hair is like naturally curly, so it would just kind of like poofs out.
Dude, even you know how badass that's gonna be.
No.
You're kind of like John C. Reilly when he plays that doctor on a Tim and Eric show. Do it, Jason. Do it. Do it.
Dude, that's what I'm gonna Patreon do. Level. Once all this goes, once all this goes, I'm gonna do that too, man.
Dude, my shit's thinning, and I'm just like, when it starts going that bad, just fucking take a razor to it and be done with it.
I'm never gonna give up, man. I'm never gonna give up on this life.
Dude, I said the same thing, man. So like, I cut my hair when I started doing jujitsu because I put it in a bun and it just get torn out like all the time. So finally, I just cut it all off. And dude, yeah, I'll be honest, like, you know, how it is long hair. You have to decide what day you're gonna wash your hair on because, like, God forbid, you can't wash your hair all the time. Now I can wash my hair every fucking day. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm not saying to cut your hair. Please don't. Like, you know, your hair looks fucking great. Dude, you keep that long ass curly hair. But I had it for so long. I just got tired of it.
No, I can't fight genetics. It's just losing.
Why even try, right? Like, genetics. Well, there are some things you should fight when it comes to genetics. Like,
well.
My dad,
if you need a little blue pill to make your shit work, you should take that. If you need hair plugs, meh, you know, your results may vary.
So does this count as a hair advice?
I don't know. I kind of guess. Actually, what's funny is I was at the doctor's today, and I had a good idea for dad advice, and I just can't fucking think of it right now.
Raphael, do you have any advice on making a comic book?
Yeah, I do actually.
Or writing in general.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you're interested in making comic books or writing comic books or writing in general, I always say start small. You know, like do short stories or short comic books first. You know, you can do. My first comic book was just like 2 years ago, and it was like a 2-page comic book, and like the artist loved it so much that he made a cover. And so like that, you know, that's cool. Shows like you can start small and people will like really appreciate it if it's really good, you know, and like it's easier to start small and make something really good than to try your magnum opus, which is what I originally wanted to do, you know, like everybody wants to do, you know, they all want to do their grand story with that's like 100 issues, you know. But realistically, you got to start small. It's important to start small because, you can if you're an artist, I think. But if you're a writer, like just a writer, you got to understand, like you're getting into a business where it's like you got to pay people now because you're the head honcho in charge now, or you're the.
In my professional life as a project manager, a proof of concept goes a very long way.
Yeah.
People that really gets people interested and gets you their trust, and you get to work out the kinks. So,
as a writer, have you found like for like even like this project, did you have to look at multiple artists to find the one you really jived with or really had your vision?
I've worked with multiple artists in the past just from trying to become a comic book writer. Like I had started off first, you know, just coming up with ideas for. Comic books, and then like developing the characters, maybe even some of the setting. And I had done a couple of short comic books, and I had done a couple of developing, like a couple of character designs, basically. And I eventually, it was probably like my third project where I met Azrael, who was the artist on the Return of Comazons. And as soon as I saw him looking for work, I knew instantly, like, I wanted to work with him, like just his name, Azrael. It's another angel, just like me, like Raphael. Yeah. So like that immediately clicked with me. I knew that like that would be marketable, like because I'm a very I'm a very marketable person. I like to think about the market. What's the market gonna like, or what can be marketable?
No matter how good your product is, if you can't market your product, it's not gonna go anywhere. It's very important.
Exactly. And so I knew like. Angel names. So I knew I just wanted to make a project with him. And so we did the short comic book, which was kind of me creating a kind of like identity for myself. and a brand for myself. Like if you go check me out, I'm at Comics Dots Comics. That's my own brand. And I'm, you know, but we were kind of creating that. And then that's what grew the attention of Grimcore Studios. And they wanted to help us develop the Return of Comics Dots into the, you know, a series. And so, yeah, that was kind of how it developed. Basically, I started small, and I encourage other people, you know, start small, you know, do a 2-page, 3-page, 4-page comic book, and then just keep doing, you know, 5-page, 6-page, 10-page comic book, and then, you know, do a one shot, do a 2, a 3-issue series. Just start small, because then each, because first of all, you got to learn how to make a comic book, and that's a very lot. It takes a lot of there's a lot of steps that goes into making a comic book. There's a lot of people you got to hire, especially if you are just a writer and you don't know how to do art, letter, ink, put a book together, like, you know, design wise. That's another skill that you got to pay for. So there's a lot of people that, you know, have helped me make this comic book. You know, Daniel Mason, who's the letterer and the designer of the comic book, Vince White, who's the logo designer. And Azrael, he's the character designer and the, you know, the artist. So, you know, it's also a collaborative effort. You know, you got to have, like, you got to be able to collaborate with people, and you got to be able to kind of, you know, take criticism, take advice, take suggestions, you know, and just like go with it, you know, and just like help, you know, make the comic not just for yourself, but for the people that are helping you make it as well. And
that's awesome.
Doing that, if you do that and you're kind of like working as a team and you're just making something that everybody will enjoy and everybody will be able to be proud of, that's the goal. You know, that's what you want to do. And so, you know, just start small and work your way up. You'll get there eventually, because the cream rises to the top. You know, if you're good, you're going to rise to the top. So this is my first comic book, and I plan on, you know, I plan on writing for DC. Marvel, you know, I plan on doing IDW,
if the rest of your output is good as the snippet that we got, I don't think you're having any problems, dude. Like it's really, I'm not just saying that because you're on the podcast. It's really good. Like I was actually, and not to call anybody out, but Jason has brought projects to me before, be it music or whatever, and they haven't been sometimes that great. Like nothing bad, but some I'm like, I don't want to talk about that because I just don't want to.
On your scale, on your opinion.
Yeah, but what I'm saying though is like I'm not gonna blow smoke up someone's ass because the person who's being our podcast. No, dude, like what you're doing is actually really, really good. And I'm super stoked to see the rest of it.
All right.
I will be a Kickstarter or whatever you call it. Like I don't know.
Yeah, so it's gonna be great.
Raphael,
all the rest of it. So
yeah. So Raphael, to wrap things up, tell us where people can find you, find your comic, etc.
So you can follow us at Grimcore Studios, Grimcore. That's the, you know, that's the studio, the publisher that's publishing the comic book. You can follow me that they're at Grimcore Studios, you know, on all the social medias. You can follow me at Kamazotz Comics, you know, Kamazotz, you know, comics. That's on all the social medias. You'll follow me there. You'll find me there. You can talk to me. I'm happy to chat with new writers because I'm a new writer myself. You know, I'm just like getting into this myself. So, and I'm learning everything as I'm going. And, you know, I'm having a good time because I'm a big comic book fan, horror fan, and I'm a writer. So I'm having a good time doing it. And if you want to like, you know, learn, I'm happy to, you know, give some wisdom. So follow me, chat me up, you know, and check out the comic book, The Return of Comics Dots. On Kickstarter this Sunday, it's going to run through October, and basically, you know, you can buy it all through October if you want. You can support whatever tier you want. We're going to have a lot of covers that we're going to reveal to you guys. A special cover coming from a very special artist. I'm going to say he did a TMNT comic book recently. So,
last run?
No, I'm not going to say what it is. But okay. I'm gonna say it's a Ninja Turtles comic book. And so, you know, we're talking about a good artist here, and we love this guy. We're gonna have a lot of covers to reveal, and yeah, we're just excited to finally show you this guy. I've been working on this for so long. I'm just so excited to show everybody in the world, you know, this comic book. So
that's awesome. All right.
And we'll make sure we link everything as much as we can in the episode description, at least the Kickstarter into your social side. People can find you and people can definitely jump in on that. And then, Jason, I see you're about to wrap us up. Before we wrap up, I just have one more shout out. I have to give a shout out to, to somebody. Because, again, we're Hispanic Heritage Month. And you brought up artwork. And a friend of mine, his name is JR, and he runs a web shop called Only My Two Cents. And we used to work together at Apple, and this was, you know, God, I met him like 10 years ago. Is this guy, this is a guy, and this reminded me of your story, Raphael. He's just, every lunch break, all he did was draw. He'd draw and he grinded. And then he learned marketing, and he learned how to build a website and learn how to market his stuff. And now the guy makes a living off his artwork and selling his artwork on T-shirts and blankets and whatnot. And it's a really inspiring story. And he was recently on a podcast called The Process of Growth. So if you guys want to see also from another cool Mexican artist, J.R. Salas, definitely check that out. Because the guy is just, you know, it's one of those things, and I'm sure you're going to get this too, as you become more and more successful. People say you're so lucky, but they didn't see all the grind that you put into this and all the research and effort and the work, the sleepless nights that went into that. And so it's I'm really happy that you're getting your stuff out there, man, because it's good, and I'm super excited. I'll definitely be a Kickstarter.
Yeah, and I'm on the send me that account. I'll post some stuff of his later this week.
Yeah, send it to me too, man. Send it to me.
I want to see. I got you. If I don't get back to you, better remind me tomorrow. If I don't get back to you tomorrow, because I'm ready to go to bed.
I know, me too, fucking old dude. All right. While we're heading into the month of October, we've got some fun things planned. Our schedule might be a little different as far as what content we're going to be covering.
Real fast, this is my favorite part because this is where I learn what we're going to be covering.
Well, what I'm about to say is I'm not sure what we're covering because I've got a couple. Okay. There's a couple different options up in the air.
There's a new Halloween movie this year.
Yeah, we've got some. It's the Halloween month, so there's gonna be a lot of different movies coming out. So we've got a lot of choices
to cover. But the Halloween Ends happened last year. So
no, the Halloween franchise is done over. Yeah. I know. Actually, I just read that they're like Miramax is trying to sell the rights again to someone else. I'm like,
Miramax and A24 are trying to buy it for to make a TV show out of it. Which A24 Halloween series, dude. Knowing A24, it's going right to Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, and they're fucking diving into Silver Shamrock, and I'm for it. So,
I mean, I'm more interested in not to get too much off a tangent, the Friday 13th series they were going to do, like the pre.
It's supposed to still happen, right?
That's what I heard, but I haven't heard. I mean, I know with the strike and everything, things are all kind of wonky, but I'd be more interested in that than the Tales of Haddonfield.
Is with the Chucky series. The Chucky series, shout out to Jennifer Tilly for listening.
Well, you're collecting yourself. I finished season 2 last week. It was excellent.
It's so fucking good. And that's what gave me hope for horror franchises to have a series.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only one I've actually watched that I really enjoyed. The other ones, like Scream, was I didn't really enjoy that one.
Yeah.
And I haven't really watched anyone talking about it. So other than Chucky, the Chucky one I did watch, I really enjoyed that one. And
The Chucky was great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like I want to watch the one you were talking about, Halloween. I want to watch that one. A24? Yeah, I want to see it.
I would watch it.
A lot of kills and not enough, like, as long as there's enough kills, like, it keeps me through the story of boring drama and romance or whatever, you know, as long as there's enough kills to keep you through it, I'm okay with it. So,
yeah. To be determined.
We'll see.
And also, this past week, Saw 10 came out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to see it tomorrow. We'll see that.
Are you going to go see it?
Yeah, I saw the last two in the theater, and it was a huge fucking mistake. Those last two were fucking terrible.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think when Jigsaw came out, I saw Blade Runner 2049 in the theater, which was amazing. Like, I fucking love it. I thought it was, like, I'm like, there's no way it can be as good as Blade Runner. I'm like, oh, no, it's better than Blade Runner. And then I watched Jigsaw the next night, and I was like, I should just fucking saw. I should just watch. And I was thinking, as I was getting my what was it called? Like, not movie phone. I had the MoviePass ticket. Huh?
MoviePass.
Yeah. As I was buying my ticket, I'm thinking, I should just fucking see Blade Runner again. But no, I saw Jigsaw, and greatly. But the trailers for Saw 10, I'll say, look pretty fucking badass. So
I know someone. I think I can.
Jesse the Mayan yes. calendar thing. That thing was really wicked. I was like, oh, okay, now I'm going to watch it because I want to know what that's all about. So I'm probably not going to see it in theaters either because since I work at a library, I get like DVDs as soon as they come out. No. So DVDs come out so quick these days. So I'm just like, I just wait for the DVD. If it's like a movie I don't really care that much about.
It'll be on Peacock in 3 months. Like, I still remember seeing the first Saw in theater when it came out. I still have kind of just that love for it. And even though a lot of them have been very bad, let's be honest,
I'll go to bat for the first three. I remember seeing the first three in the theaters, and all three of them really were.
I think the third is the best, in my opinion. Actually,
really? I like two the best, but yeah.
Marathoning them is pretty good. Marathoning them, you really enjoy even the bad
dude,
ones.
Dude, so I
love it. So.
My goal was to marathon them before I watch 10, but then I realized that 10 happens between one and two.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, fuck, now I can't marathon them because I'm going to be ahead in the story and it's not going to work out well for me.
There'll be some other time travel.
One with Chris Tucker. Do you got to watch that one now too?
Chris Rock.
Chris Rock. Yeah.
It wasn't good. It wasn't good.
I liked it.
Okay. Yeah. It was better than Jigsaw. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Jigsaw was fucking bad.
All right. I'm going to wrap this up, guys.
Wait, Jason. I know. One more shout out. I did see a screening, but Regal Cinemas was playing it as a Fathom event of Shaky Shivers. Mm-hmm. Which is a newer kind of werewolf comedy movie coming out. And I will say, definitely worth watching. I thought that it was it tried to throw back to the 80s and 90s and make it just real. And it definitely hits in some marks, doesn't hit in others, but it's an hour and 20 minutes. And I had a good time watching it. So I definitely recommend that guy.
Anything else? Monday, anything else?
You did? No, I think I'm good. Wait, Jason,
okay.
I'm good.
Okay. All right. That wraps up another episode.
Your shirt says the good, the bad, and the because wait, no, okay, it was full.
Yeah. Shout out to Fright Rags for their awesome shirts, the good, the bad, and the ugly shirts. It's really cool.
Dude, and the softness of their shirts.
I love their shirts.
Dude, I bought one of their polos. I bought their Jaws polo to wear to work.
Oh yeah,
it is comfortable. Nice. Just saying.
Okay, next week I'm not entirely sure what we're doing, but I'm sure it'll be a good time to tune in. We appreciate everyone for listening. We would really appreciate if you would give us a rating or review on iTunes, a rating on Spotify, and check out our YouTube for videos of these podcasts. And with that, we thank you for listening to Dads from the Crypt.
Adios.
Follow Dads from the Crypt on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or I will follow you to the grave. No, seriously, you really should watch, but be careful what you ask for. You may get it.